Well, it's Sunday morning, and I'm a Southern Baptist. Get ready. My name's Tom Brady, Jr. I'm an alcoholic. And by the grace of God, I haven't had a drink since July 20th, 1965. And I'm grateful for that. That's why I'm here. I'm one of those who believes that gratitude is more than a word and more than a feeling. That real gratitude always translates itself into responsible action. I can sit on my butt and tell you how grateful I am. And if I'm not out there trying to give away this gift that has been so freely given me, I'm a liar and the truth's not in me. There's a book we used to look at on Sunday mornings that says it really clear. Though I speak with the tongue of men and angels and have not love, I'm like a tinkling cymbal or sounding brass. And to me, love in the spiritual sense that I've learned in this program is not a feeling either. Feelings come and feelings go. Love stays. Love to me is responsible behavior towards other human beings based on care, respect, and concern for them and acceptance of them just like they are. Love for me as a recovered alcoholic is to try as hard as I can to bear witness, as the third step prayer says, to those I would help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. I'm here today to bear witness. That's an old spiritual term. It's a spiritual program. Alcoholics Anonymous is not based on thought and it's not based on feeling. It's based on action like all spiritual programs are. Every spiritual teacher who ever walked the face of this earth stressed one thing. Do it. Do it. Do it. Don't talk about it. And they made it very clear that the talkers and the doers were quite of a different school. And so I've tried to be a doer over the years. And I've worked really hard at it. But, you know, with all of my efforts, I'm very aware that without the grace of God and you, I'd be dead now. Think about that for a minute. I'd be dead now. Now, spirituality is often looked at as some far-off, ethereal kind of a thing. And I've learned in this program it's anything but that. It's here, it's now, it's real. Over at the beginning of the 10th step where it says we've now entered the world of the Spirit, to me, that means I have left the past and come into the present. The Spirit is now. You are, I am, God is. And I am now to live in this present time and grow in understanding and effectiveness. And I grow in understanding through steps 10 and 11 and effectiveness through step 12. I do it and I do it and I do it. Even when I don't want to do it. And I want to talk to you about some of those things. The Greeks have a word for spirit. And that same word means air and wind and breath and life. Let's take breath for a minute. Breath and spirit. I breathe out, I give life. I breathe in, I take in life. If I do not breathe out or give, I die. If I do not breathe in or receive, I likewise die. It's just as simple as that. I spent a lot of my life storming the gates of heaven looking for God. And like an old-timer told me at one point in time, and I hated him when he said it, Tom, God ain't lost. And he's not. I remember a story told by one of my heroes in this program about three little fishes swimming around the ocean one day, and a big fish swam by. And he said to these three little fish, nice day, isn't it? They said, yeah. He said, isn't the water nice? And swam away. First little fish turned to the second one and said, what's water? He said, I don't know. They turned around and asked the last little, what's water? I don't know. And these three little fish spent the rest of their life swimming around in that, looking for that in which they lived and moved and had their being. So it is with God. Be still and God will reveal himself to you. Another line from that book, which is not conference approved, but I'm going to use it anyway. Those that wait upon the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and not faint. They shall mount up with wings like eagles. Damn, that's worth waiting for. So it's not an ethereal thing. Another thing I've noticed about spiritual teachers, they're always advising me to become like a little child again. I've seen some little kids running around here this morning. They're absolutely gorgeous. I don't want any more of them, but they're absolutely gorgeous. Now, why in the world would spiritual teachers say, if you want to come in my kingdom, you're going to have to become like a little child? Why would they say that? I think there's good reason for it. Little children are wise, honest, open. Have a lot of common sense. When I was a little boy, I knew some things before anybody taught me. And you did too. And one of the things I knew was when I was beyond my limits, if I went and got somebody bigger than I was and turned the problem over to them, there was a good chance the problem would be solved. I knew that. And so when I found myself in over my head, I'd go get my daddy or my mama or my sister or get a big stick. I'd get something to even it out. And I knew that. Nobody had to tell me that, you know. I used to have a friend when I was growing up. His name was Ronnie. He's the filthiest kid I ever met in my life. Ronnie had boogers all over the sleeves. Pick them out of his nose, put them in his hair, twist his hair up. And Ronnie's mom and daddy were street drunks. He didn't have anybody to take care of him. And I loved Ronnie, but I was scared of him. And I could beat him at two things. I could beat him shooting marbles, and I could outrun him, which was good because I was scared of him. Now, the game of marbles, any of y'all ever shoot marbles, very simple. The rules are simple. You win, you get the marbles. I'd win, Ronnie'd take my marbles. And I was scared of Ronnie. But I knew if I got somebody bigger, I might get my marbles back, and I'd go get my daddy. I'd say, Ronnie's got my marbles again, Dad. And he'd say, did you win, son? I'd say, yes, sir. Let's go get them back. Go over to Ronnie's. He'd say, son, did you get Tommy's marbles? Yes, sir. Did you win? No, that's not right. Give them back. Okay. It was just as simple as that. Okay. Now, I've heard philosophical dissertations for 32 years on the first three steps of this program. If I look at it through a kid's eyes, it falls out real simple like this. Step one says I've lost my marbles and I can't get them back. Step two says, I believe somebody bigger than me can. And I turn the situation over to the bigger one, and lo and behold, I get my marbles back. So I've come to simplify, especially for the new people here. And for those people who are in that state that Clancy was talking about last night, where you're sober, but you're miserable. Over in North Carolina, we call it five-year menopause. We do. It's an excruciating time. I'm sober. Everything's wonderful. I feel like shit. I want to talk to you. I want to talk to you in little red hen language about what I believe about me as an alcoholic. Of what I believe about me and my alcoholism. Okay? First off, I never liked me very much. I always considered myself a failure. Now, I'm a perfectionist, and by definition, I'm going to fail at everything I do. And the more I'd fail, the less I'd like myself. And I'd fail over and over and over and over again. And since I didn't like myself, it became very important that you did. And so I performed for other people to get their acceptance and approval. My whole life was a performance. I knew what it said in the big book was true about me when it said, the alcoholic is very much the actor. There's his stage character. This is the one he wants the world to see. I had 100 stage characters. Whatever you wanted me to be, if you'd approve of me and accept me, I'd do it. And I still have periods of that. One of the greatest jobs I've had in this program is to accept me, all of me, with my glitches and my warts and my imperfections and my goodness. Because I realize today that I'm a combination of lightness and dark. I always will be. We are not saints. But I've come to be able to accept, like someone said to me not long ago, some people think you're a saint and some think you're a son of a bitch. Which one are you? And I said, both of them. And I am. And that's all right. But God, that self-dislike reached a point where I hated my guts. And I hated them so badly that when things got going good in my life, I'd screw it up. Like the big book says, I'd build up a bright outlook for my family and bring it all down around my head with a senseless series of sprees. I'm also the kind of person that always believes that anything that feels good should be done to excess. If it feels good, overdo it. And I ate too much, and I drank too much, and I gambled too much. And I remember when I found out sex felt good. Y'all remember that? I was by myself just like all of y'all were. And in spite of some dire warnings from my mother about a certain part of my anatomy rotting off and going blind, I figured it felt so good I'd keep on till I was nearsighted. It's one of my big successes in life. And you know, that's one of the things that drives me today. Clancy was talking about last night. Clancy made a good talk last night, I thought, you know? He talked about that old jet. They don't put on no brakes. They put the engines in reverse. Okay? Do you know what feels good to me today? Sobriety. And if it feels good, I can't get enough of it. Same dynamic, different direction. What is the difference? The program and God. The program and God. You do it, you do it, you do it. I've always been looking for magic. Y'all look for magic? I want a magic fix. In between every two drunks, I'd go back to the Baptist church and rededicate my life to Jesus. I know Jesus flinched every time he saw me coming in the door. And I was deadly serious, but I was deadly deluded because I believed that God was a big magician and he was going to tap me and make me well miraculously without any effort on my part, because essentially as an alcoholic, I'm lazy as hell. Let's face it, y'all. We work 90, 100 hours a week on the job. But our sponsor tells us to read two pages in the big book, and we simply can't find time. Let's face it, you know. And I wanted instant results. Damn the process. Fix me and fix me now, God. I dare you. There's no magic. Magic, by definition, is illusion. And it don't last. Always been the kind of person who likes to do everything at one time, do it all perfectly. Get home, have phone calls, you know, and I'll start answering the phone calls, have letters, start answering them at the same time. You ever try to pee and comb your hair at the same time? Now, women may be able to do that. I don't know. But when you're 6'3", you're going to miss something. I wake up sometime in the morning, you know, my body's not awake. My brain's going 1,000 miles an hour. I gotta. That's the reason that period of quiet in the morning is so important to me. Just sit there and focus on my breath. Nothing else, just focus on my breath. And that old mind's just running crazy up here, but I ain't looking at it. I'm looking at my breath. I'm serious. Every good form of meditation focuses on the breath. I ain't trying to do nothing holy. I'm trying to let go and let God. I'm trying to take my focus off this monkey that runs around my head up here all the time, chattering and falling, you know, and put it on quietness and stillness so that God can reveal himself to me. I've always been a great starter and a poor finisher. Everything I ever did in my life, you know, I went into it full speed. I had two basic speeds, full speed ahead and stop. And I'd go into things and I'd master them. I'm a very intelligent human being. God gave me a very high IQ, which damn near killed me. And I'd go running in and master it, you know, thinking, this is it. And it wasn't it. And I did that in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'd come zipping in full speed ahead when the law was on my butt. And then something incredible would happen. I'd get feeling better. And the law wasn't chasing me. And my dog was licking my face again. And I'd pull it back on stop and go right back out and do it again. Okay. When I say I'm an alcoholic, I mean I live in a body. You new people, listen. That will not handle alcohol. It never would, and it won't now. When I put alcohol in my body sent me a clear, instant, certain message. Get some more of that stuff, Tom, and get it right now. Now, Dr. Silkworth calls that the phenomenon of craving. It doesn't happen in the average normal drinker, but it happened in me instantaneously. And the scientists say I have a biochemical genetic disorder having to do with the hypothalamic information control center in my brain. I read that and I said, shit. And you know, they're right. But who can understand that? And I came to simplify. AA says I'm allergic to alcohol. Same damn thing. Just one word instead of a long sentence. With multisyllabic words. How you like that? I got my tongue going early. And I had a mind that kept telling me I could do what my body wouldn't do. Y'all have a mind like that? Someday, somehow, if I just handle it right, I'm going to learn to control and enjoy my drinking. You know? And psychiatrists get hold of that and say I'm a narcissistic, egocentric, dominated by feelings of omnipotence, intent at all cost on maintaining my own inner integrity. And I said, shit. You know what AA says? When it comes to alcohol, I am strangely insane. This is not insanity in the sense of schizophrenia or clinical depression or bipolar. This is insanity of a totally different ilk. You know? Why do I say this? Because it doesn't have to do with mental processes alone. It has very little to do with them. You can't treat it with medications. Alcoholic insanity cannot be treated with medications. You can give a schizophrenic some Haldol and he'll come into the world for a little while. You give an alcoholic some Haldol, he'll be back 10 minutes later and say, give me some more of that shit. You can lay some people down on the couch, got emotional problems, you know, they can talk it out and everything. You lay an alcoholic down there, he's going to say exactly what you want to hear. Magnified 100 times. Yes, sir, it was my mama. My potty training was terrible. My little potty chair pinched my ass one day. And I ain't never been right. And he said, Psychiatrists are always overly interested in mamas and shitting. You ever notice that? The strange insanity of alcoholism responds to one thing and one thing only, because it is based on my being disconnected from something I mustn't be disconnected from. It responds only to power. Page 45. Doesn't say lack of good intelligence was my problem. Doesn't say a lack of a good mind was my dilemma. It says lack of power was my dilemma. That I had to find a power by which I could live. And obviously that power had to be greater than me. So it's a kind of insanity that only responds when I can reconnect with that which I have become disconnected from, that power source. And I believe that with all my heart. And what separates Alcoholics Anonymous from all other programs that ever came into this world to deal with people like me is it says I am spiritually sick too. And that once the spiritual malady is overcome, notice this, please. Once the spiritual malady is overcome, I'll straighten out mentally and physically. Not the other way around. Like I did between every two drunks. You know, I go down at the Finish Line Sporting Goods store and get me a Nike outfit. Rededicated myself to Jesus, and I go to the Nike store, put on this new outfit, and I'd work out, and I'd get all physically healthy. Now I'd start reading Aristotle again. Studying a little theology here and a little there, you know, and I'd get all mentally well. Then I'd get drunk. Somehow I missed the problem. You know? What does spiritually sick mean? I told you I'm a perfectionist. I'm also an idealist. I'm a hypersensitive romantic dreamer. I've never been satisfied with life or me or you the way it was. I always wanted more. And in order to get that more, I became an ace manipulator. I tried to control people. It was important to me to always be right, to always understand everything, to always be in control, because only then was I ever comfortable. And I was a really good manipulator. Only when you manipulate people, you know, they don't like it. I'm talking pages 60 to 62 in the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous. Read it and reread it and reread it. And they fought back, and a wall came up between me and them. And I became cut off from my brothers and sisters, and I believe in the process from the higher power. And I was isolated, separated, disconnected, and lonely. And the Alcoholics Anonymous program is so simple, it's beautiful in its simplicity. It says the way out of this is you get spiritually well. Well, how do you do that? Well, first of all, you quit playing God. Quit trying to be in control. Quit trying to be right. Go take a look at that wall that you've built. Identify the stones in it. Go talk it over with somebody else to make sure you haven't missed any. Ask God to remove those stones, just enough of them, so you can be of use to Him and your fellow man. Step across, make restitution, rejoin your fellow man, and you'll rejoin the power. And you'll be sane. That's too damn simple, isn't it? Intellectuals don't understand that. I didn't understand that when I was working up here on this plane. Any of y'all working on this plane? If I told an intellectual today, you know, he'd say, you know, you've been sober 32 years, you must be an awfully strong person. And I'd say, no, sir, I'm pretty weak. And he'd say, that makes no sense. And he'd be right. Well, you must have fought very hard to win the victory over alcohol. No, sir, I surrendered. And to him, it makes no sense, and he'd be right. What else do you do? I go to meetings.
Oh, group therapy.
No, sir, it's not group therapy. It's a bunch of drunks sit around and talk to each other. Lie a lot, too. And he says, that makes no sense. And I say, I know it doesn't. Well, what else do you do? I have a sponsor. Oh, a psychotherapist. No, sir, he's a plumber. And he says, that makes no sense. I said, I know it doesn't. Well, what else do you do? Well, I have to follow this program. Oh, the great metaphysicians and theologians got together and laid you out a program. No, sir, it was put together by a bunch of drunks. And he says, that makes no sense. And I said, I know it doesn't. And he's beside himself by now. Well, who founded this outfit? So a bankrupt stockbroker and a proctologist who had lost his ass. Put this in the bank. What may seem like nonsense intellectually is real sense spiritually. As long as I can remember in my life, I was mad. Y'all have been mad. I don't know what I was mad about. I was just mad. At everything, I guess, you know. And later on in my drinking days, when I was drinking, the anger would come out big time. And I was always afraid. You know, we talk about fear as if, you know, it's a many-splendored thing, and it is. But fear is just one great big ball, the way the program teaches it. It's got lots of tentacles like an octopus, but fear of this, fear of that. But fear is fear. And I was scared. And I had a lot to be scared about. I was the ugliest baby you ever saw. A doctor asked me one time, "How you know that?" I said, "My mama told me." She wouldn't take me out of the house for 6 weeks. I was on the face of the earth. She didn't want anybody to see me. He said, "Oh, that must have been traumatic for you." I said, "No, sir, I've seen my baby pictures. Mama's right, I was ugly." And it didn't get much better as I grew. I was one of those skinny little kids, you know. Skinny little boy, you know. My shoulder blades protruded badly. And I'd pull my shoulders around to try to compensate, and my little chest would disappear. Had little old skinny bird legs, and Mama made me wear knickers. Any of you guys have to wear knickers? Somebody told me not long ago, "Knickers are coming back." I said, "Not on my ass, they ain't." If that wasn't bad enough, I had freckles. I had freckles from the soles of my feet to the tip of the longest hair on my head. I had freckles where people never afforded having freckles before. And I hated them. I always wanted to be a macho man, you know. Isn't it funny how you always want to be something you ain't? Whatever it is you are, that ain't what you want to be, you know. I always wanted to be a charter boat captain or a hitman for the mafia. There's a control problem for you, isn't it? Damn, that's pretty ultimate. And I dream about that stuff. I just remember the story old Jacko used to tell about dreaming. You know, when you're living in a dream world, you miss a lot of life. He said these two winos woke up under a bridge one day. Then one of them said to the other one, "I had the best dream I ever had in my life last night." He said, "Well, what'd you dream?" He said, "I dreamed I went home. Mama gave me $100, told me to go spend the whole day at Disneyland." He said, "You go?" "Yeah, I went. I had the best time I ever had in my life. Rode all the rides, saw Mickey Mouse and Donald Duck, looked at all the pretty girls, went to the shows." The other old wino said, "That ain't nothing. I had a better dream than that." "Oh, yeah," he said, "what'd you dream?" He said, "I dreamed I had a luxury apartment, two cases of Jack Daniels. And the door opened up and two most beautiful women you ever saw in your life came through and started taking their clothes off. And the other wino was all caught up in the story. And he said, 'Why didn't you call me?'" He said, "I did, but your mama told me you was at Disneyland." You remember that? That's an old Jack old story out of San Antonio. I want to be a macho man. And my mother had four big old brothers. And the most macho one was my Uncle Durwood. They called him Dud. And Dud was a motorcycle cop back in the days when they wore riding breeches, leather spats up to their knees, and he had a harness across here with silver bullets in it, and pearl handle 38 sitting high on his hip, and he smelled like gunpowder and shaving lotion, and he squeaked when he walked. That's macho. And that's the way I wanted to be, but on top of those freckles and that skinny body was the most beautiful shock of snow-white hair you ever saw in your life. And all of my macho uncles called me Puddinhead. How in the hell are you going to be macho when people call you Puddinhead? But you know, I remember in retrospect when I was sitting behind my Uncle Dud on that police motorcycle with my arms wrapped around him, I was not afraid. Even then, I needed a higher power. Uncle Dud's 88 years old now. He's my hero. He's always been my hero. I tell him that, and it just tickles him to death. The man can lie like nobody you ever heard in your life.
Every time he tells me one of them old police stories, the guy gets bigger. You know what I mean? And he shot further and that kind of, I just love it. You know? He's a wonderful man. I told him, you can't die. He said, why? I said, I want no hero. He said, okay, I won't die. And he ain't died yet. We need heroes in this program. I believe that with all my heart. I'm not talking about idols. Some poor sucker makes a good talk and you put him up on a pedestal somewhere and you wait for him to make a mistake so you can bust his ass wide open. That's what idols are made for, to destroy. I'm talking about heroes. The people in this program get out there and do it, and they make big mistakes, but they get up and they do it again, and they do it again, and they do it again, again. Do it, do it, do it. These are the heroes. These are the ones I can follow. And but for my heroes, I would not be alive this morning. And most of them are dead, but they're not. You understand that? They're not. As long as I'm walking around, they ain't dead. Because I'm a sum total of what they gave me. It is their spiritual teaching that feeds me to this day. You know? I heard old Jack O talk in 1965. I laughed so hard that I cried. I just thought, this is wonderful. I didn't know it was all right to laugh. You know? And damn sure I didn't know if it was all right to cry. And I've learned since that laughter and tears, that's God's way of cleaning out my soul. And I laugh a lot, man, and I cry when I got to. Sometimes when I don't got to, you know. I was a sad little kid. But my childhood wasn't that bad. I get sick of these people talking about their parents. Damn it, my parents weren't perfect. My mama was a black belt Southern Baptist. Just think on that for a little while. Who would have breathed for me if she could? Who tried to relive her whole life through me, and I hated her for it. And I love her to death. She was one of those poor people who didn't know how to openly express their love. She didn't know how to do it. She didn't hug me and kiss me much until the last 7 years of her life when she had Alzheimer's. She just couldn't let me go. She loved me dearly. But she didn't know how to express it the way that we understand it being expressed. Can't we cut our parents some slack? Can't we do that instead of blaming them for everything? I think the Eagles put out a song about that. Turn on the tube, what do I see? A whole lot of people crying, don't blame me. Point their crooked little fingers at everybody else. Spend all the time feeling sorry for themselves. Victim of this, victim of that. Your mama's too thin, your daddy's too fat. Get over it. It's like going to confession every time I hear you speak. You're making the most of your losing streak. Some call it sick, but I call it weak. You drag it around like a ball and chain. You wallow in the guilt. You wallow in the pain. You wave it like a flag and wear it like a crown. Got your mind in the gutter bringing everybody down. Bitch about the present and blame it on the past. I'd like to find your inner child and kick his little ass. Mom and Daddy did a good job with what they were given. And I lived in a little town where I was lucky enough to have an extended family on the block where I lived. And those things are things of the past now. All the kids belonged to all the parents, and all the parents belonged to all the kids. You know, it was wonderful. And I remember these people with fondness because I had some good times in my childhood. I don't want to paint you a totally black childhood. It was glitches and dark and light too, just like everybody's. Remember the lady next door, her name was Lena. She's the best cook on the block. Best eater on the block. Lena was heavy. I used to love to hug Lena, you know? When you hug Lena, you had a titty in both ears. I didn't know she knew Lena, too. And Lena rubbed me on the head and said, "I love you, Puddin'," and I just go, And you know, old man Lucas would come by the house, and he'd be going down to slop the hogs down at the hog pen. And I'd get in that wheelbarrow of his and ride down at the hog pen. While he fed the hogs, I'd go over to the creek and wade and drink cold water and catch some crawdads. That was wonderful. And I'd take off my shoes, you know, and walk on home down that path. And life was good, man. And I'd go home and lay down on the grass and look up in the sky. I wasn't looking for nothing. It was there. So I looked at it. That's what kids do. If it's there, shit, they look at it. And I'd say, "Ain't that beautiful? I wonder who made it." You remember having thoughts like that? Cloud go over. Nice cloud. Wonder where it came from. It go west. I wonder where it went. Didn't try to figure it out. I just put it in my memory as a pleasant experience and moved on to my next one. And I go to the movies every Saturday, you know. It costs 9 cents to see a double feature movie. With a serial like Flash Gordon and Buck Rogers. And some good cartoons, you know. Bugs Bunny and Tweety and Porky Pig. Not this crap they got on TV now. I mean, it's a disservice what they do now. Wile E. Coyote's one of my role models. Whatever you say about Wile E., he sticks to it, don't he? And these cowboys, man, they were wonderful, you know. And the man next door ran the theater and popcorn, fresh popped. It was a nickel a bag. And you run out of popcorn. He knew you had no money. And he'd fill up your popcorn, you know. And so I spent the whole day every Saturday at the movies. It was wonderful. And you remember some of these guys? You remember Hopalong Cassidy and the Durango Kid and Rocky Lane and all these Sunset Carson. Wild Bill Elliott, there's a good one, wore 2 silver 6 guns turned backwards. You draw down on Bill, he'd spin them guns and shoot yours out then. He didn't have to blow your guts all over the screen, you know. My favorite cowboy was Lash LaRue. Call him Lash because he carried a bullwhip. You draw down on Lash, he whipped a gun out of your hand. Lash is cool, man. I was watching Lash one day, and he's standing up on the roof of the saloon, done run all the bad guys out of town. He popped his whip, and his horse run by. He leapt into the saddle, popping that whip, riding off in the sunset, and tears came to my eyes. It was magnificent. Sat through that movie again and again and again, see old Lash ride off in the sunset. Hey, you know you got to emulate your heroes. I went home, got a piece of rope, went up on the garage. Little boy next door had a pony named Beauty. I said, "John Q, go saddle up Beauty." And he did. I said, "Now walk her past the garage." And he did. And I popped my rope and leapt into the saddle. When I hit it, you could hear me screaming, "Myrtle Beach." I don't know if that's a spiritual experience, but I ain't never forgot it. And 30 minutes later, I got my breath back. I started wondering about Lash LaRue. But something was missing, and I knew in my insides it was missing. That's as clear as I can put it. And I knew if I ever found whatever it was that was missing, everything was going to be complete and total. There was an emptiness inside of me, and I didn't know what made it. And I took my first drink, and the emptiness was gone. God, that was powerful. God, that was powerful. And it was magical. I didn't have to work for it. And it felt good. And I liked it, and I wanted more. 15 years old. Blacked out the first time I ever drank. It's a blackout drinker from the word go. By the time I'm 16 and 17, with this answer of mine that I had found, I was being locked up regularly in the Wake County Jail in Raleigh, North Carolina. My father on the board of deacons for 50 years. My mother, hostess of the Tabernacle Baptist Church, and their sons making the social pages. And I disliked myself some more and some more and some more. By the time I'm 23, I'd had over 1,000 stitches taken in my face alone as a result of drinking. And I was still telling myself, someday, somehow, if I just handle it right, I'm going to be able to control and enjoy my drinking. Because it was the only answer I'd ever had. It was the only thing I'd ever found that would fill up that emptiness even for a minute. I know what Clancy said last night. I quit drinking. I was a wild man. Sick. And I had to have that place filled in me. I'm not going to bore you with a drunk a log. It's not important. I first came to Alcoholics Anonymous when I was 23 years old. You know, I'd been in the service and I'd been booted out. I'd been in several colleges and I'd been booted out. You know, I'd just gotten out of a psychiatric ward and I was booted out. I was thrown out of the psychiatric ward. The Cherokee Indian up there wouldn't do what I told him to do. I beat the shit out of him. I'm laying up mom and daddy's house drunk. Ain't it funny how you hate your mom and daddy and they blame everything that happens to them on it, but your ass gets drunk and you need help, you end up at mom and daddy's. And I'm laid up there drunk. Mama goes down the street to a little florist shop run by a little guy named Simon Parker. And Simon, happy. He running around there happy, man. Got this little medallion around his neck. She said, Simon, what you so happy about? He said, Miss Brady, I've never told you this, but I'm an alcoholic, and I'm in recovery. And last night was my 7th birthday, and they gave me this medallion. Isn't it beautiful? And if you ever know anyone I can help, Miss Brady, just let me know. Mama took him by the arm and said, come on, Simon. Now, here's the picture, y'all. She's taking Simon Parker to see a boy, okay, who has lived by his wits, who even when he was drunk has made straight A's, who has always finished on top of everything he's ever done. He's an intellectual nightmare. And on top of that, he's full of religiosity. He knows all the spiritual answers too. Simon hadn't a sense he'd gone on back to the florist shop. He took me to a meeting. Well, I went at AA like I'd always gone at everything else, full speed ahead. Master it. Rise to the top. I like control. I didn't say I used to. I said I like control. And some of y'all saying, I don't like it. If I was to pull the bus of life in this room today, every person in here would go for the damn steering wheel. Twelve steps on one side, 12 traditions on the other. I got a partial photographic memory. It was duck soup. I had them. Guy standing up front with a blue book. Everybody listened to him. He was in control. I like that. I got me a blue book. Started memorizing. I can quote great passages of the book Alcoholics Anonymous to you right now. But I don't have to anymore. What a relief. But it's all I had. The same old persona came to Alcoholics Anonymous. Yeah, I wanted to stay sober on my terms. And for the next 7 years, the longest I ever stayed dry was 89 days. And I knew all the answers. You intellectuals hear me? I knew the words. I didn't do the action. I didn't do the action. And I wondered why. It's like Chuck used to say, the turtles of life were passing me by like they was riding motorcycles. I know that feeling. I'm that close to the switch and I can't reach it. Everybody else is reaching it. I can't reach it. And that's true. I can't. I missed a big point. This is a we program. Oh, I hurt. And I met some of the hatefulest people I ever met in my life. They were ugly, profane, talked in circles, nonsense, and people called them old-timers. There's one old boy up in Burlington, North Carolina, named Bill Crumpler. He's dead now. God rest his soul. I hated that man. I called him grumpy. He'd wait for me at meetings. He denied that, but he'd wait till I got there. As soon as I got through the door, down would come the finger. How you doing, boy? I'm fine. Back me into the corner with profanity and tell me how I was. That's scary. Boy, he'd say, you can't think your way into good living. You got to live your way into good thinking. And I think to myself, you dumb old bastard, shut up. I didn't say it to him because I was definitely afraid of him. Boy, how come you're always looking for God? God ain't lost. There it came. I hated this man. So I had to get him on my side. That's the way I always played. You don't like me, I'm going to get you on my side. I went out to save a soul. Wasn't a 12-step call. Hell, I went to save a soul. Found this guy in a cabin, log cabin. Been in there for 2 months. No indoor plumbing. He was turning blue. I got him over to the hospital. Got a woman from down the street. We swept out that place, shoveled it out, and hosed it out. It was filthy. Got him back from the hospital, and he was going to live. I thought, I got to call Grumpy and get him to see what I have wrought. And then going through all that stuff, when Grumpy got there, I'd found a gallon of wine, and I was drunk as hell. And he was not impressed. So I tried to wow him with my intelligence. Isn't it funny how they always come to me last in discussion meetings? It was like the meeting was over when they got to me. And I'd say, Aristotle said so-and-so, and Plato said so-and-so, and Grumpy would turn around and say, shut up, boy. And I drank on, and I suffered. I hurt. I knew there was an answer. I knew there was a switch, and I could not understand why I couldn't reach it. And on or about July 20th, 1965, I got a whack from alcohol. I can't take any credit, you know. Alcohol got me here. It beat me, as the book says, into a state of reasonableness. I didn't even know it. I was on 5 years probation. I was never supposed to drive again in the state of North Carolina. I had 2 years on the chain gang hanging over my head. All I had to do was get caught drinking. And I come to on the floor. I'm a professor at a college, and I'm about to lose my job. My wife and daughter are gone, as they always went when I'd get drunk. I don't know what was different this morning. I came to and I kind of understood, Tom, you can't drink. Isn't it funny how it finally dawns on you? I'd said that before and I'd known that before. But this time it wasn't just a surface thing, you know. It had some depth to it. And Tom, you can't quit. And you're going to die. Now, Grumpy had already told me one night when I called him for help after it was too late. Do you ever call for help when it's too late? Test pattern's off TV, all the liquor's gone. You say, shit, I need some help. And I called Grumpy, and before I could say a word, he said, boy, don't you ever call me again drunk. Matter of fact, don't you ever call me. If you want to get sober, you know where we meet, and don't call me to come get you. You can walk. And he said, frankly, I don't give a damn if you ever get sober. That hurt my feelings. I said things about him you ought not to say about any child of God. And I bless him for it now. He never changed. Last time I saw him, he's dying with bone cancer. I've been sober 16 years then. As I walked through the door of the hospital room, down came the finger, and he said, boy, you'll never make it. God bless him. He's one of my heroes. I walked back to Alcoholics Anonymous. I made a profit out of it. I didn't think it would work. I didn't think it would. I'd been there, man. I understood the thing. I didn't think it worked. But one thing had changed. This thing was not working. I was rum dumb. You understand? And I thank God for that. I just went. Well, the people there found out I was walking, and I never walked again. I didn't have a driver's license the first 2 years I was sober, and I went to a meeting every night. They didn't do like we do today when a new person comes in and say, here's my number, call me. They said, what's your number? And I got 6 or 8 phone calls a day from people who said they were glad to see me, which I knew they weren't. And they were glad I was there and things. And they talked to me in a language a brain-dead person can understand. He didn't come in and say, let me tell you about God. I'd have fell in 1,000 pieces. You know what they said to me? Sit down. Shut up. Get in the car. Now, damn, I could understand that. I kept coming. Grumpy was later to tell me, Vinoy, the only thing I ever did right was I kept coming back. He said, we thought we was going to go bankrupt buying white chips, but you finally made it. I saw this man in the group that I liked. People kept talking about a sponsor. I've had wonderful sponsorship. And I was scared of this man because of his eyes. He had clear, sparkling eyes. The kind that you believe will see right through you. But I liked him, and I liked the way he moved. He bore witness. And I walked up to him. I said, I'm Tom. I don't want to die. Will you be my sponsor? And he turned on me and said, boy, I've heard about you. They tell me you're not just an alcoholic. They tell me you're crazy. And I'll help you on one condition. I said, what's that? He said, we will do it my way. And I don't know but one way, and it's in the book, Alcoholics Anonymous. You won't do that, boy. And you know what I said? Yes, sir. Somehow, I had found the answer for me to success in this program. As Tom Powers used to say, read the directions on the idiot card and carry them out. You ever notice how brilliant your sponsor seems before you ask them? And then they go dumb on you immediately? He said, first thing I want you to do is go to meetings early. Shake everybody's hand and ask them how they're doing. I said, I don't want to go to meetings early. I don't care how they're doing, and I don't want to shake their hand. And why do I have to do that? And my sponsor said to me, boy, you don't ask me why. You do what I tell you to do. A lot of people confuse a counselor and a sponsor. They ain't the same. I got a master's degree in counseling. If you're impressed by that, fine, I'm not. But you know, sometimes a counselor would tell you to do something like that, and they'd say, how does that make you feel? My sponsor didn't give a happy shit how it made me feel. Matter of fact, he said to me over and over, effort, result, effort, result. Go through the motion. The emotion will take care of itself. Nobody cared more about my feelings than Harry. Nobody. But he knew there were certain things I was going to have to do no matter how I felt or what I was thinking, because action to him was the magic thing. And we went to meetings every night. My wife would say, he's here. I'd say, who? She'd say, the Lone Arranger. That's what she called him. I went to meetings, I shook everybody's hand. It must have been really funny. You know, I'd stare at the floor. I didn't look at nobody. They might see me. And after a few weeks, I saw some knees. Saw some hips. Wish I'd have skipped that part. Haven't got time for that today. Nice hips, man. And then I was looking them in the eye, and I was glad to see them, and I did care how they were doing. And they were looking back, and I knew that they felt the same way. And all of a sudden, that emptiness inside of me was gone. Man, I was home. I've been home ever since. I don't care if I'm in Omaha or Saskatchewan. You take me to an AA group with my brothers and sisters of the Spirit, and I'm home. I found the secret of the whole spiritual way of life, as far as I'm concerned. The word we. First word in the foreword of the first edition of the book, Alcoholics Anonymous, is we. First word in the first step is we. We is used more times in that book than any other pronoun in the world. I couldn't do it. In and of and by myself, I'm a dead person. I allow you to help me by following your directions. And I'm alive. That's power. The power of community is so underestimated. Sometimes I just go to a meeting, you know, because that's what I do. I remember telling my wife one time, I was in bad condition, furious about something. I didn't know what. Where are you going? I said, I'm going to a meeting. You think it'll help you? Hell no. Well, why are you going? Because that's what I do. Got home at night. She said, did it help you? I said, hell no. Went out the door the next night. Where are you going? To a meeting. You think it'll help? Hell no. Did that about four nights. Come in the house. She said, help. I said, hell yeah. This is what I do. This program changes character. Character is not changed by thought. Character is changed by action and action only. I do something and do something and do something and do something until I become it. And I ain't after the big stuff anymore like I used to be. I ain't ever going to be totally honest. Ain't no way, man. Unselfish? Come on. Purity is out, Jack. But you know what I try to do? I try to get to the lesser principles, which I think are the most important and the most forgotten. You know what I try to do every day? I try to be kind to everybody I meet. I try to be polite, understanding, compassionate. And notice the word try. And if I can go to bed at night and say, Tom, did you try? You know? And I'm going to answer yes. I'm an unqualified success. And my father's the most beautiful man I ever knew. Gentlest, kindest, sweetest man I've ever known. He exuded love. He didn't have to say the word. He was it. It's amazing. He was a real Christian. And it's amazing how he would bond with old timers. It's like they knew each other all their lives. When I was 18 years old, judge gave me an alternative. Go to jail or go to service. And I got patriotic quickly. And this daddy who adored me took me down to the bus to send me off to the United States Air Force. And while he was telling me how much he loved me, he had his hand planted firmly on my butt, pushing me in that bus. He died with lung cancer. And he and I have become such good friends again. And I was with him when he died. And the day before he died, he turned over and he said, son, am I going to die? And I said, yes, sir. He said, when? I said, the doctor says real soon. Does that frighten you? And you know what he said to me? It's not an AA member. Yeah, it frightens me, son. But I learned a long time ago. You give the fear to God and go about your business. And then he said something to me, God, I ain't ever going to forget. You can have everything else. He said, Tommy, I love you. You're one of the finest men I've ever known in my life. Now, it's the same father that pushed me on that bus. Same son that was pushed on, but something radical has happened. You know what I mean? There's been some changes here. My son got up to introduce me at an AA meeting. Thank God he's been sober over 5 years now. And he said, the guy is going to talk to us tonight. He's one of the finest people I know. He said, he's my hero. He's my dad. You can't get that in a bank. I read words into the big book for a long time that were not there. I think we all do. I'd read those so-called promises on page 83 and 84, you know, and I'd add words to it. We're going to know a new freedom and a new happiness continually. Fear of people and economic insecurity will leave us forever. You know how we alkies add words to that? Well, that ain't so. Let me tell you, life goes on. Ben Orr was talking about it yesterday. It goes on. The last 6 or 7 years of my life, Lord, have mercy. Cancer, emphysema, high blood pressure, deep vein thrombophlebitis, a wife who I loved with all my heart walked out on me. My mother died. This wife that walked out was killed in a head-on collision. My dearest lady friend in the program, I call her my second mother, died shortly after this. My best friend in AA died. It was like somebody died every day. And I'm getting sicker and sicker and sicker. And then last February the 11th, my oldest daughter, Christy, 37 years old, died of alcoholism. Did I grieve You're damn right I did. I still am. Did I yell and scream and question the wisdom of God? Yes, sir. Did I want to die? Yeah. Especially after Lisa left. But guess what? Not once did I think about taking a drink. What this program promises, if I maintain my spiritual condition, is that I will be sane. The obsession to drink is gone. Happiness and all the rest, that's relative. That's marginal. Sanity's the thing. Read the big book with that in mind. Even so, as God restored us all to our right minds. And I thank God for that. To take away this God-awful obsession. To give me life all over again. To rebirth me. To give me the opportunity to be like a child again. How do you be like a child? Children, no. My son Jason, when he was little, he was a potty chair philosopher. He sat on his potty and he wanted somebody to sit there and talk to him. And I never will forget him saying to me one day, "Dad, why don't I be the dad for a while and you be the son?" I said, "How do we do that?" He said, "It's easy. I'll grow up and be the father. You grow down and be the kid." The 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, if there are nothing else, are a process of growing down to become a child of God. And what's more, an anonymous child. No greater, no less than anyone else. But loved just as much by God. I don't comprehend God. I don't need to. I don't try to explain God. I can't. I just relate to God. I think about God as often as I can as I go through the day, and I have a little conversation with him. If I see a pretty flower, I say, "Thank you for the flower." If I do something right, I say, "Thank you for helping me do something right." If I do something wrong, I say, "See, I did it again. If it weren't for you, I'd always, you know, help me correct." God is so comfortable now that I'm not a theologian. Please remember one thing. God loves you. I love you. Please remember to be gentle with yourself and with the people around you today. Thank you.